Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family. Rocket Can. What up, everyone? Welcome to Maggie and Perloff. An exciting day, an eventful day all around the NFL. And we got storylines galore, of course. You can always listen to us on CBS Sports Radio. You can watch us on CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. Our Twitter handle, @ Maggie and Perl. What up, Andrew?
So it's our first Black Monday as a show, Maggie and Perloff. Is it everything you hoped it would be?
It's kind of weird to say that about people getting fired. It is intriguing because the thing is about coaches getting fired, while nobody wants to celebrate that, I think the reason why it's so intriguing is because it represents hope for franchises that know that their team is headed in the wrong direction. But sometimes you get a surprise, usually one every year. And to me, the Miami Dolphins were not a team that looked like they were headed in the wrong direction. So when they parted ways with Brian Flores this morning with an overall record of 24-25 over his 3 years, he had not made an appearance in the playoffs. But to me, this was a team that looked like it actually was going in the right direction. It didn't seem like it had a coaching problem. This team has a quarterback problem for sure, but not a coaching problem.
Yeah, 19 wins over the last 2 years. That's a lot of wins in the NFL. That's a quick hook for a guy who came in. Remember where the Dolphins were when he came in? They had no talent. They still haven't upgraded a quarterback. I agree with you completely on that. And you look, Mike Tomlin has this amazing year at Pittsburgh, takes a pretty bad Steelers team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
They reward loyalty. They have the same guy. They let him grow. And then in Miami, it's the exact opposite. They're not keeping anybody. They're going to the Dave Wansats of the world. And then they try Flores, who seems like a good coach. This is unbelievable. To me, a lot of it has to do with Steve Ross being 81 years old and saying, I want to win a Super Bowl now. Does that philosophy ever work in any professional sport where an owner is like, I'm running out of time. I want to win one now.
Well, I mean, they have $70 million in cap space or thereabouts. They still do have a quarterback problem. They're going to keep their general manager and Chris Greer. So are they closer to a Super Bowl? Well, unfortunately, the Patriots are the Patriots. They rebounded. They're back in the playoffs. And you're catching the Bills now in like one of their good moments, you know, over the last 20 years. So there's a tough division, and the Jets maybe are on the ascent, you know, with but playing with a rookie quarterback, of course, with Zach Wilson. You know, this is odd to me when a coach gets fired and even the fan base is taken aback. Like, we have guys and women showing up in clown outfits in Jacksonville to protest, right, you know, Shad Khan, Trent Baalke, and what's going on. Like, you had almost a mutiny going on in New York with the fans of the New York Giants. Meanwhile, Joe Judge is going to get to stay. Matt Nagy, we've been speculating about for months. You saw Mike Zimmer. Who, listen, at least took the team to the playoffs a few times, had a 2-3 record in the playoffs, but was there for 8 years. So you can't say he didn't have his shot, but had a 72-56 record. But it was time for some new blood here in Minnesota. It's like nobody saw the Flores thing come in. I don't even think the fan base in Miami was looking for him to go.
So, as you know, I'm from Philadelphia. They were ready to fire Doug Peterson like 8 games after he won the first Super Bowl in franchise history. Yeah. Fan bases want to fire everybody.
Always.
Now, you're right. I don't think anyone wanted to fire Flores. It's also when you think about, as a franchise, where people think about the Miami Dolphins. I do not think as a franchise right now they're well thought of, but Brian Flores is well thought of. He's popular for what it's worth among NFL media types. Everyone says he's respected around the league. Now, he is he's a bit tough. He does fire people quickly.
Well, they've had a lot of coordinator turnover. And what this really begs to me and what it looks like is there was just a power struggle here, right, and he just lost. Now, are they going to end up being the better for it? I don't know. I saw a lot of speculation on social media, and I think this kind of tends to square, that they wouldn't have made a move like this, the Miami Dolphins, that is, without having somebody in mind as their head coach, like already kind of having an idea. Now, the Dolphins can't come out and say that. Obviously, there's a Rooney Rule. There's a lot of things in place where you have to go through certain things before you make a hire. And I'm all for those rules. I'm all for the incentivization for hiring minority candidates. All that stuff is great. But, well, the reason behind it isn't great, but the fact that it exists, I think, actually
helps. Yeah, we follow you.
Yeah, so I think they have somebody in mind, and it's interesting that the owner, Stephen Ross, had to come out right as they're saying goodbye to Brian Flores and shoot down all rumors about Jim Harbaugh because Stephen Ross is a Michigan alum. He doesn't want to pluck a coach who just took his team to the college football playoff out of his alma mater.
Oh, absolutely. And
do you buy that?
Well, he had interviewed Harbaugh or wanted Harbaugh before he hired Flores. So Stephen Ross, we know, likes big names. He likes having celebrities around. Yeah. Jim Harbaugh would be perfect. If you're going to hire Brian Flores, the only way I walk out of this saying this makes sense is you bring in Jim Harbaugh, who's got a personality to transform things. I like Flores, as I did say, but you didn't really feel, as you mentioned, that they were on a rocket ship to the Super Bowl there, especially with Tua, a quarterback. Jim Harbaugh, to me, represents that's a reason, at least. Somebody like him. Now, the other names that we're seeing linked to Miami, I'm looking at all the potential candidates, and it's like the Matt Eberfluses of the world or Dan Quinn, who we've seen sort of fall short in Atlanta, or Byron Leftwich or an Eric Bieniemy. These are all decent candidates, but none of them are worth firing Brian Flores for. You know what would be great? A defensive-minded coach who's tough-minded, because Tua is not going to win with offense. You have to win with defense. And you know who fits that bill?
Wait,
Brian Flores.
Brian Flores, right.
Yeah.
Describing here? But I think their coach.
Brian Flores would be the perfect coach for where they are right now, unless you could give me a name, Maggie. And I hope you can, because I want to get excited for Dolphins fans. Give me a name that's going to, I don't know, perk our interest, get us a little bit back into this franchise, which I loved so much as a kid when Dan Marino was there.
Well, ask and you shall receive. I have an idea for the Miami Dolphins, but it's not going to be easy. And even the process could end up being a tiny bit painful, but they have to do it. Got rid of Brian Flores, who people believe was actually maybe a Belichick disciple that could actually work in the NFL, you could have success with in the NFL, somebody who would buck the trend of all the Belichick disciples. You need someone who's an established winner. Dolphins have gone through, the last two coaches were first-timers, with Adam Gase and with Brian Flores. It's time for somebody who's been there before. This could be painful, because it's going to have to be a godfather offer. Make them an offer they can't refuse. You've got to go to the New Orleans Saints, and you've got to do everything you can to get Sean Payton out of New Orleans. Now, they may not be a possible godfather offer to trade for Sean Payton, but just think about it. It's been a long time in New Orleans. The quarterback situation there is completely janky, put it that way. They have no idea what they're doing. The ownership situation is bizarre. The Benson family, the infighting that's going on between the kids, all of that stuff. It's just not a great situation. If Sean Payton asked to be traded, maybe they would grant him. With a first-round pick, Miami Dolphins still have one. I know they traded one. The Philadelphia Eagles got it.
Right, they have the Niners pick?
They have the Niners pick at 22. They also have a second-round pick. You could also add a player in there. Again, it may be painful. But ask yourself, with a team with that much cap space available, if Sean Payton, who had so much success with a smaller quarterback, albeit a Hall of Famer in Drew Brees, if he can see anything in Tua, could you possibly roll the dice with Tua this year and see if Sean Payton can get anything out of him? If not, you bring in a new quarterback. They can't afford to miss here, because you've been getting lapped by Belichick for years. Now the Bills are in there. The Jets seem like they at least found something. We'll see if that actually pans out. Who the hell knows? It's still the Jets, after all. You've had no identity for decades. It's time for an identity.
So you sell out for Sean Payton.
You do.
Couple questions.
Yes.
One, why does Sean Payton want to go there? He has a
Because a lot of people, as they get older, move to Florida.
Okay, I like that. But he has a great defense in New Orleans. We saw him shut out Tom Brady just weeks ago.
Yeah.
He'd be going to a better division. He'd be leaving a franchise that he has defined as his franchise and his legacy. The other question is, if the Dolphins can get him for this, What's to stop every other team that has a vacancy?
Well, they can get in on it, too. This should be the biggest bidding war.
Can I tell you some other teams that would fit with Sean Payton? How about the Broncos make a play for Aaron Rodgers or bring in Sean Payton? How about the Texans start over? How about the Raiders who need a big name?
Listen, that's why there's not that many Super Bowl winning bona fides in the NFL right now. And Sean Payton, they could just be at a crossroads here with New Orleans. You know, sometimes people want to change the scenery.
Okay, so if he's available, I agree. Dolphins should go all in. Let me get back to the quarterback.
Okay.
So I watched Tua pretty carefully this weekend. It just seems like he puts his whole body in to make an 18-yard floater to the sideline every play.
Yeah.
Their offense,
like he's throwing a medicine ball.
They have no margin for error because he doesn't show any arm strength. So everything has got to be meticulously timed. The receiver has to make a great catch. The offense is going nowhere. We saw it completely fall apart against the Titans. So I'm not in on Tua. If you're going to win with Tua, you have to play very conservative football. Not really what Sean Payton built his legacy
on. He's the king of the RPO. That's where he really is effective. And it's really like almost a minor miracle that Jalen Waddle was able to break. I know it took an extra game, but break Anquan Boldin's rookie receiving, you know, receptions record, considering Tua for the most season was throwing him the ball. And he's just like not a great quarterback.
Right. So if I'm Sean Payton, and even if he does go to Miami, I'd rather have the blank slate. I'd rather start over. I'd rather bring in a fellow Eastern Illinois alumni, Jimmy Garoppolo. I have no idea. I mean, you could make a play for Russell Wilson.
What about Jameis Winston?
Jameis is a little bit complicated.
Well, of course he's complicated, but I guess you
bring back. They were winning with him. I don't know if he was thrilled with him. How about a Gardner Minshew?
Listen, all these bridge quarterbacks, like you are yesterday, may I just say, was like the day for Andrew Perloff.
Yeah, it was a huge day.
We mentioned a little bit last week, but we know it's a constantly new audience with a new show. We appreciate you listening. Andrew Perloff, my dear friend and co-host of this show, is friends with every mediocre backup quarterback in this league.
And if I'm not friends with him, I aspire to be friends with him and will.
It is like, yesterday was like your day. It was like, that's your Super Bowl yesterday. You had Dalton going and Case Keenum. I mean, this was everybody you know.
How about Saturday, Gardner Minshew II just balling out for the Eagles? I know they
Trevor
lost.
Trevor Siemian? I mean, these Trevor are your Siemian, people.
A Northwestern guy? Week 18, see, that's the only reason I like 18 weeks.
Is yes.
Get some backup quarterbacks.
Maybe get another book deal.
The Saints have been really using a lot of those guys. When Ian Book went in there, remember how excited I was for Ian Book?
Yes,
Ian Book, all I'm hearing is they love Ian Book. There was a test this year. Could Sean Payton win with any quarterback? And he couldn't. He couldn't win with Siemian, and he couldn't really win with Ian Book. So he needs to upgrade in talent. Tua is not an upgrade. So I don't think that's the ideal fit. But if I'm Miami, I agree 100%. That is the name that you target. Now, they said no to Harbaugh. Do you believe them?
Tough, right?
Why would that report come out so quickly? Jeff Darlington, who's so close to the team with ESPN. Then Joe Shad, who's also close to the team.
Yeah.
It was within 5 minutes of the firing, they said it's not Harbaugh.
Well, I mean, think about that, right? You want to point fingers at a coach and say that maybe he's the problem in Miami. How about an owner who's more loyal to their alma mater than they are the professional football team? Where if you're a Miami Dolphins fan, it's like, I'm paying tickets, I'm paying for parking. I've been watching, you know, a team that's kind of like maybe on the upswing, but also is capable of losing 7 in a row in a season and then winning 7 in a row, going 8-1 down the stretch. They fire the coach. I mean, your head's probably just like spinning if you're a Dolphins fan. And meanwhile, here's the owner saying, no, we can't disrupt a program thousands of miles away because I happen to go there in like 1960.
Right.
Not inspiring if I'm a Dolphins fan.
If you're in Miami today and you find out they fire Flores, you're like, well, they better be going after Jim Harbaugh.
Right. Please don't hire some like first time, no-name assistant and like sell us that that's going to be something amazing.
Yeah. If they try and sell Nathaniel Hackett or Matt Eberflus or Nick Sirianni version 2, whoever that is, that's not going to work.
Yeah, it's like, here, go up against Belichick. Meanwhile, you just had a guy who was actually able to beat Bill Belichick on a semi-consistent basis.
I watch, as I said, the Dolphins pass. After the game, Brian Flores goes up to Belichick and gives him his clip. It was sort of a hug, sort of a handshake. He's just like, Bill, I have so much appreciation for you. What do you think of Flores going back to New England, rebuilding his reputation, or is he a guy that's good enough to get a job right now?
I think that he's probably going to get a job right away, or at least that's been some early reports. Now, granted, that could be relationships in the media, and you try to boost up a guy who just lost his job. You know, the thing about that is, and I know guys and coaches go from one program to the next, one franchise to the next, and don't skip a beat, but isn't it better sometimes when you do have like one season off? Listen, easy for me to say, you got bills to pay, you got a family to support, you know, you've got, there's like a money element of here that, you know, that comes into play, I'm sure. But like, I noticed this has happened several times where a coach doesn't have even 1 year to just take a breath, realize like what went right, what went wrong. You jump right into the next coaching thing. Sometimes it works out fine. A lot of times, though, it doesn't. I'm not saying guys get burned out. They just never learn from their mistakes. Now, Brian Flores might say, I didn't make a whole lot of mistakes. The front office could have had Justin Herbert, and they went with Tua, and that's ultimately what sunk this franchise. I hate to distill it down to something as simple as that, because when a coach gets fired, there's obviously 100 different things that probably went wrong. But, Perloff, it kind of does come down to that. We're watching Justin Herbert in this epic game last night on every fourth and long, just throwing laser after laser after laser. You know, the Dolphins just would be so different if they had just not missed on that decision.
It's the old Sam Bowie, Michael Jordan thing. Yeah. Defining a guy from who is picked right behind him, it's completely and totally unfair, but I 100% agree. I also didn't like that they traded the first round pick this year to move up to get Jalen Waddle, who is great, but you could have gotten a similar player at 12. Yeah, it's really not fair to Flores. The other thing is the vacancies are not great situations. Like going from this to Houston or going from this to Denver or to Las Vegas, there's a reason they're vacancies. So I agree he should sit back, assess everything. He's 40. He's going to get a job.
So we mentioned Justin Herbert last night, and we will get into more of the coaching conversation later on in the show because Perloff and I are hiring. We do have, besides Sean Payton, we do have hires for all the other coaching vacancies in the NFL, so you want to stay tuned for that. But coming up next, it may be one of the most controversial timeouts in the history of the NFL. A little hyperbole there. But was Brandon Staley actually right? We'll get to it in just a moment. You're listening to Maggie and Perloff on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, and Sirius XM, channel 158.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This Saturday, NFL Wildcard Weekend kicks off with two big games on CBS. Saturday night at 8:15 Eastern, 5:15 Pacific in primetime. The Patriots head to Buffalo to take on the Bills. Maggie Gray's Bills get set for kickoff at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific with the NFL Today. Then on Sunday at 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, it's a huge matchup in Dallas as the Niners pay a visit to Dak and the Cowboys. Two great playoff games on back-to-back days. It's Super Wild Card Weekend this Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, only on CBS. were Maggie and Perloff. And now, coming into the weekend, there were 130 scenarios for clinching.
Oh, that's it?
Yes. And I argued that we should read every one and digest them and analyze them.
That's it. That's the show.
The reason there are so many is because there's always ties in playoff scenarios. And 99.9% of the time, these ties are completely irrelevant. Yeah. Like, if a team needs three ties to get into the wild card game, it's really not worth hoping. This week 18 was an exception. We all knew it coming in that the possibility of a tie with the Raiders and the Chargers would completely change the AFC wild card picture. Could have gotten both teams in. I heard game theory being thrown around. I heard they should take a knee on every play.
Game theory is like a regular day for you, though.
Yeah,
you just like say that's just like part of your vocabulary.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because all of those tie scenarios came with this massive caveat, which was, but it means the Colts would have to lose to the Jaguars.
Right.
And there's no way that's going to happen. Well, that turned out to be the coldest take that anyone had all season long. You and I were guilty of it. Basically, the entire NFL world was guilty of it. Even though we had some evidence that the Colts have struggled in Jacksonville, you had a team where the fans in Jacksonville were showing up in clown suits. All Indianapolis had to do was win this game. Actually, all they had to do was just feed Jonathan Taylor, and they couldn't do that. Carson Wentz was a massive liability. They dropped this game in a stinker. They're out of the playoffs, and it just threw the rest of the day into turmoil.
And the funny thing, too, the game, like, you watch it, and you're like, yeah, the Colts are the worst team on this field right now.
Yes,
they didn't even look like they blew it. They just looked like they got pushed around all day long. That was one of the more disappointing losses. Now, we saw the Jaguars beat your Bills. You never know what that wild team is going
to
do. But that really opened up the day, and then it was just fun from there out. Leading to Sunday night, NBC, Raiders, Chargers. I'm watching it, and about third quarter, I'm like, this seems like it's headed towards a tie.
Okay, so something happened last night, too, where not just it started to feel like it was going towards a tie, but the groundswell of the public started rooting for the tie.
Yes.
So, first of all, like, that never happens. When are we ever rooting for a tie? Like, when is the tie the most satisfying outcome? That never, ever, ever happens.
We hate ties. That's the least popular thing in all of sports.
Yeah, it's not American. Like, I know they do this in European soccer, and now they obviously do it in the NFL, I know. But it feels un-American to have a game end with a tie.
Yeah, there's two things. No one understands overtime rules
to
this day, and no one likes ties. That's all we know about overtime.
So, as the game is sort of careening towards overtime, you could just sort of sense it in the air. Now, what ends up happening after this is unbelievable. So, by now, you probably witnessed it. You probably can't believe it. If you're a Charger fan, you definitely can't believe what just happened. But on the 19-play drive that Justin Herbert leads to tie the game before they even go into the overtime, that's really, I think, where this kind of got super interesting. We can talk about Brandon Staley going for it on 4th-and-1 from his own 18 and
Love
stuff
it.
Like that.
Yeah. No, not exactly.
It's like, oh my goodness. Even that one was hard to defend, even for the nerds out there. And I say that lovingly. But let's start there because this was a drive that put Justin Herbert like into another stratosphere to me. It was unbelievable that this 19-play drive where he had to convert 3 fourth downs on the try, 83 yards, the touchdown to Mike Williams. And what was wild about it is that his receivers are exhausted. You know, Chris Collinsworth is like, everybody's just so dead on this field. Yet Justin Herbert, the zip on his passes didn't go down, it seemed like, 1 mile per hour. The guy was incredible. Well, on third down, he actually was terrible. And his receivers were dropping everything. On fourth down, he couldn't be beat.
Yeah.
How do you explain this?
I was about to ask, what happened the first three downs? Those passes weren't even close.
Some of them were not even close.
And the other question is, how did the Raiders not cover those guys? They were covering so well on the first three downs. All you have to do is protect for that first down or, in two cases, the touchdown. And they let the Chargers receiver get right in front of them. It was incredibly frustrating for Raiders fans. So you're saying this would have been the defining moment of Justin Herbert's career?
I think so. Well, his young career.
Right. But it was not.
No, it wasn't. Because the game goes to overtime, and now, like, the tie is really, feels like it's real. You know, now the tie is in place. So, obviously, field goal, Raiders win the toss. They kick a field goal. Chargers come back down. Chargers, by the way, complete another fourth down, crucial fourth down, just to get into field goal range, kick the field goal. So, now the Raiders take over again with about 4 minutes and 30 seconds left, and the score is tied. So obviously they start moving down the field. And it's a little funny because they're moving down the field and you're wondering, if you're the Chargers, when do you start calling timeout? Normally that's what you'd think. But because all of our brains were thinking tie, this is going to happen. Brandon Staley not calling a timeout to try to save any type of clock almost started to make sense.
Right.
And then it didn't. So obviously you get to the 2-minute warning here. This is where things started to get really, really amazing. So, well, Derek Carr converts a 3rd and 8 at the Las Vegas 44. This is Zay Jones, the 11-yarder Zay Jones. Might have been one of Carr's best throws of the day. Then you get the 2-minute warning. So then Josh Jacobs comes out, runs the ball for -1 yard. You're inside the 2-minute warning now. This is when you use the timeouts if you're Staley and you're actually trying to win this game, I think. Doesn't call the timeout.
To be clear, remember, Chargers and Raiders both get into the playoffs if there's a tie.
Right. So then it's 2nd and 11. Jacobs again, this time for 7 yards. They still don't immediately call timeout. Staley lets a little time go off the clock. Play clock's down to like 4. He realizes that the Raiders are set up for another run play. He needs to call timeout to get his run defense personnel out onto the field. That's when everyone went bananas. Because like, wait a minute. Is someone actually trying to win this game? I thought we were all going for the tie here. Staley calls the timeout. And now you're looking at a 3rd and 4 from the Chargers 39, 38 seconds left to go. And what happens? Jacobs runs for 10 yards. And then at that point, to me, it was obvious. If you're in field goal range to the point that they were, the 47-yard field goal, you have to try that. You can't just take a knee or let the game clock run out at that point. You have to try it. But to me, Perloff, it's like the world's going nuts.
Yeah, conspiracy theories everywhere.
They can't believe it. You know, everyone is just, you know, we were all thinking ties, so you just can't believe it. I always thought the Raiders or the Chargers were going to try to win this game. Call me Machiavellian, Maggie, whatever. But I always, especially the Raiders, thought if they could bleep over the Chargers, they're going to do it. And I would say on top of that, Rich Bisaccia, who's the interim coach of the Raiders and is getting tons of credit today, and for what he did as an interim coach in a really difficult year for the Raiders, deserves a lot of credit. If he had actually let that game end in a tie without even attempting a field goal of 47 yards, pardon me, that would have been coaching malpractice. That gets you fired on the spot. Because if the Raiders had tied, yes, they get into the playoffs, to go play the Kansas City Chiefs, a team they had lost to by 27 points in one meeting this year and 39 points. Now, granted, now they're going to play the Bengals, a team they also got smoked by once this year.
Yeah, they got blown out by both teams.
But would you rather be facing the two-time defending AFC champions, just won a Super Bowl 2 years ago, Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback on the planet at times, or a Joe Burrow upstart Bengals, haven't been to the playoffs since 2015, and Joe Burrow's knee's not 100%? You've got to kick that field goal.
Definitely. And I think the Raiders were going for the win the whole time. And here's the question. Do you buy that Brandon Staley's timeout with 38 seconds left inspired the Raiders to go for it, thinking that the Chargers somehow fired them up?
Right.
That's what a lot of people said this morning. I don't think you or I buy it for a second.
Well, let's listen to a little of the postgame sound because you may get a better feeling after this or you may be super confused after this. I don't know. Let's first start with Rich Bisaccia and his thoughts after the game about whether or not they were playing for a tie or going for the win.
It was a conversation we were talking about. You know, I don't know if you know, but we ran the ball there, and they didn't call a timeout. So I think they were probably thinking the same thing, you know. And then we had the big run through there. And when we got the big run, it got us, we thought it was advantageous field goal position for us. We were going to take the field goal and try to win it. But we were certainly talking about it on the sideline. We wanted to see if they were going to call a timeout or not on that run. They didn't, so we thought they were thinking the same thing. And then we popped the run in there and gave us a chance to kick the field goal to win it. So we're certainly talking about it.
Well, the way he said words that, it makes it sound like Brandon Staley's timeout did change his thinking and did make him go for the field goal.
Listen, I appreciate the candor there. That would have been a must-lie situation for me. I think I would have said we were going for the win the whole time.
Well, I think he was considering the tie. I mean, all he said was we were talking about the tie.
We were talking about the tie.
So you admit that they definitely talked about the tie. It was an option.
Well, it's like your safety net option, but it's not a good option. And to his credit, once you get into field goal range and once Jacobs rips off a 10-yard run on third down, you've got to kick that field goal. And they did the right thing. They let time go down to 2 seconds and all of that. If I were Bisaccia, again, appreciate the candor, but I probably would have said no matter what, we were trying to gain yards and we were trying to win that game. We weren't thinking tie at that point.
Well, you also have to keep in mind the Chargers' run defense is not good.
No, it's not.
That sort of defined the whole night. That situation, they bring in big Linval Joseph. They should have been able to stuff them, and we shouldn't be having this conversation. They should have had to try a 57-yarder. So a lot of people took Bisaccia's words and said, there you go. It's all Brandon Staley's fault. If he hadn't called that timeout, it wouldn't have played out like this. See, I just think Bisaccia was talking off the top of the head. I don't think he said, because of that timeout, we ran the play and kicked the field goal. Did you think there was a cause and effect?
Well, I saw someone put it this way on Twitter, and I'm sorry I can't remember who it was, but they put it as like the prisoner's dilemma. You know, both people were going to kind of go down with the ship type of thing. Like, you know, to assure that you would at least make the playoffs. I didn't really see it that way because of what was at stake in terms of your position and, quite frankly, what you've been able to do to the Chargers. Now, I know that the Raiders defense ends up giving up that touchdown at the end of the game, but, like, Herbert had to pull out every trick in the book for that one and for the field goal. So I have felt for the Raiders that they were actually, like, sort of, they were never in control of the game. I can't say that because it was so back and forth, but at least they had to be feeling better because the Chargers' run defense was absolutely gassed.
They should have put it away. I mean, Justin Herbert had to pull throws out of nowhere time and time again. It was unbelievable.
But in terms of like, okay, so this is where you lose me a little bit with this whole like calling the timeout. Do you honestly think that an NFL coach went into a game being like, guys, let's just tie, everybody's friends, this is awesome, sunshine and rainbows, and then you get to under 2 minutes of overtime, and the other coach calls a timeout, and you're like, you know what, bleep that guy. That guy didn't understand, we had an unspoken thing, and he's not sunshine and rainbows anymore, he's out, we're going for the win. Like, does that make sense to you? That's not how NFL coaches coach.
You're making this so personal, and you're bringing out your own personality in here. Do you think Rich Bisaccia cares at all? Like, this is a rival? You think Rich Bisaccia, who's fighting for a job, cares what happens to the Chargers, even in 1%?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think so. That's not possible for me to believe that. Rich Bisaccia is trying to keep his job coach of the Vegas Raiders. You go to Mark Davis and you're like, I'm a killer. I'm a stone cold killer.
No, but
I didn't want a tie because I care more about this franchise than anything.
That is a tie. You're painting a tie as if it was a tie. This tie was not a tie. It was a victory for both franchises. It got them into the playoffs. It's not as simple as like, theoretically, of course you want to win and not go for the tie. But this was all about getting to the playoffs. I think you're overestimating personal, like, sort of go foot on the throat kind of thing.
That's why it doesn't make sense to me, because you're like, theoretically, this, you know, of course you always want to go for it. That's not what people are saying. People are saying that he would have intentionally settled for a tie. In what world would that make sense for an NFL head coach who's playing a division rival who's trying to keep a job? Like, to me, that never squared.
Because he would have risked losing if he had played all out. He got lucky that the Chargers couldn't stop the run. If he had started throwing downfield, he could have thrown a pick and the Chargers could have came back, hit a field goal, and kicked him out of the playoffs.
Well, they got lucky on the 3rd and 8, or Derek Carr made a great throw.
I know.
And then they ran the ball and they were going to keep running the ball. The funny thing about that is, why didn't Brandon Staley understand that they were only going to run the ball there? They were going to start passing with 38 seconds left and a trip to the playoffs on the line if you just run the ball. Like, come on, you're like the smartest guy in the room. How do you get caught the wrong personnel there? We're late to the bottom of the hour update, so we're going to pick up this conversation on the other side. It was just one of the crazy games that happened yesterday. And I don't know about you, but like after the day was over, I was just like exhausted. I was just exhausted.
Yeah.
I didn't even play. I didn't play a snap. I was just dead tired. Maggie Perloff, CBS Sports Radio. It's time for a CBS Sports Update. Here's Rich Ackerman.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter. Medela is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, it's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link cbssportsradio.com/askthepros or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. It's Maggie and Perloff, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM channel 158. On Twitter, at Maggie and Pearl, P-E-R-L, you can go and leave your response here. We're asking you, did the timeout have anything to do with the outcome of last night's Chargers-Raiders game?
Right. If Brandon Staley, the Chargers coach, hadn't called a timeout, would the Raiders have settled for a tie? And I believe it's safe to say both of us think the timeout was irrelevant, that the Raiders were going to go for the win anyway.
I believe so. I believe they were going to try to run the ball as much as they could, and then wherever they landed with 2 seconds left, if they could, you know, get a first down, which they did, wherever they were with 2 seconds left is where they were going to kick the field goal from.
I think part of the reason there's so much backlash against the Chargers and Brandon Staley is people don't like Brandon Staley.
Yes.
I think the average fan is pretty agnostic
and
on Brandon
Staley.
And you
think I'm getting personal.
No, I mean, I don't think that most people dislike Brandon Staley. He seems incredibly nice. He looks like a nice guy coach. But the NFL cognoscente, the old school, the people we see on TV, the coaches, they do not like
him. Oh, the coaching fraternity, you mean.
They do not like him being so aggressive on fourth down. So last night, 4th and 1, Chargers are at their own 18, 3rd quarter, 9 minutes left.
Yeah.
It looks like they line up to go for it. Of course, they're just trying to draw the Raiders offside, right? No, they hand it off to Austin Eckler.
Yeah.
Eckler loses 2 yards. And everybody, all the former coaches are like, I told you so. He's too aggressive on fourth down. It was pretty crazy. Even I admit, I'm an analytics guy. I did not totally understand that. I saw some numbers afterwards. That was aggressive.
Well, on the broadcast, they tried to explain it.
Yeah,
right?
I saw that.
And it went from 35% chance you win the game to 25% chance. Like, meanwhile, look at what was ahead of all of us and them in that game. But what's crazy about that is I actually, listen, you want to go for it on fourth down because the numbers tell you to do it, fine. I just have a hard time believing that the numbers would tell you run Austin Eckler into the middle of their defensive line, and that's how you are now 35% chance more to win the game than you were 5 minutes ago.
Oh,
you have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, right? Herbert is there. Like, you want to go for it on 4th and 1, you're 18, and, you know, put your team in that kind of bad position because the Raiders are able to capitalize the field goal off of that, obviously, when they didn't get the first down. But, like, that's your play call?
Yeah, but you're doing that thing that people have 1 foot in on analytics do. They say, I understand going for it on fourth down.
Well, I really don't, but
right.
Not there.
But you called the wrong play. I see that on Twitter, like, oh, you should have known to sneak it. Oh, you shouldn't have done this. Like,
I don't think the sneak there was, like, a long one.
Right, but Justin Herbert is, like, 9 feet
that's
tall.
True.
So I did hear some people say he should sneak. So let me ask you this, though. Are you, in general, okay with Brandon Staley being more aggressive than any coach in the NFL on fourth down?
It can be infuriating at times.
Yeah.
I mean, going for 4th and 1 of your own 18, like, you're giving the big middle finger to a lot of people. Yeah, a lot. But I do kind of get the idea of you have your best player. You want to put it in your player's hands to win the game. And at that point, they didn't feel like they want to play the field position game. Whatever. Should have kicked the field goal, of course. And I'm not even just saying that in hindsight. That one was especially egregious. John Harbaugh's had a couple of these, you know, late in the season where they're just like, what? It seems a little desperate. If you have numbers and you're going to be consistent to those and that's how you're going to run your team, fine. I just think that the analytics, like, it stops at one point. It's not me being half in. It's like, it doesn't feel like the data's developed enough where it's like, all right, I recognize I need to go for it, but the play I'm calling had felt like it had such a little chance of success.
You never know. I see what you're saying. It was a terrible play.
That's, and like, the best thing the Raiders do is their defensive line.
But I think Brandon Staley is the future. I think coaches coming in, watch this next class of coaches that get hired, except for the retreads. They're going to be aggressive on fourth down. Doug Peterson, by the way, might come back, the former Eagles coach. He's aggressive on fourth down. I think if you're going to commit to it, you commit to it. Brandon Staley actually is a good coach. I think he made some young coach mistakes. I think he mismanaged this game. Honestly, I think the Raiders should have won in regulation. The Raiders' defense didn't fall asleep on countless fourth down and tens. Mm. But this is a trend right now, and there's a reason it's a trend. Think about it from a fan's perspective. When the other team's at fourth and one at the 45, are you praying that they bring on the punt unit? Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you, what
well, it probably depends who your quarterback is, quite frankly. Because there have been times, I'll say, like for the Bills, they went for it on a fourth down at the near the goal line against the Tennessee Titans. Right. Josh Allen slips. They end up not getting it. They lose in regulation. Then against the Tampa Bay Bucks, there's a fourth down, a fourth and short. They end up kicking the field goal to go to overtime. Granted, they lost in overtime, but it still felt better as a fan to lose in overtime than it did to have them go for it on fourth down and get stuffed.
But you're okay, though, because it was Josh Allen. Like, you were okay with him going for fourth down. Right, you have a quarterback like that. And I understand
and
your
Justin
point.
And Justin Herbert is that guy.
Yeah, I understand your point about Herbert. But I think punting from the opponent's 45, punting into the end zone, and getting net 25 yards, that is something that cannot exist in 2022 NFL. It's over.
Do you watch the New York Giants?
The league has changed. That old school mentality, it's gone. You have four downs. A quarterback with four downs should be able to get a first down. If you can't, you're not going to win the game anyway. 18, I know it's aggressive, but have you ever heard of that college coach, by the way, who never punts?
Yes, I have. NPR did a story about him. This is how much he crossed over.
It could be fourth and 21 in his own 2-yard line, and he's going to go for it. Now, that's a little aggressive, I will admit, but I like what Brandon Staley's doing. I didn't totally understand last night, but to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say, don't be aggressive on fourth down just because it didn't work, I'm sorry, you're just going to get left behind if you don't be aggressive on fourth down.
Right, and we'll get into the New York Giants a little bit later on and their strategy on second down, let alone fourth down with QB sneaks. But here's the thing about where you're talking about how this is the future. And it's interesting because, yes, this could be the future with Brandon Staley and how he's aggressive. And again, John Harbaugh's aggressive. Sean McDermott's aggressive. There are other guys who are aggressive here. He really stands out, though, for sure. But you have owners who aren't meeting you there. And that's why I'm not so sure about this hiring cycle and how forward thinking or whatever this next cycle of coaches are going to get hired, what they're going to do. Because, first of all, a head coach does so much more than just decide when you go for it on fourth down, right? They call them CEOs because they really have all these different types of responsibilities. And I'm looking at the openings that are, you know, here now because of it is Black Monday. We're going through these coaching hirings. So you have an 81-year-old Stephen Ross. You've got the Bears.
Oh, my God. The McCaskies, yeah.
The McCaskies, who are, you know, one of the original, like, OG franchises,
yeah,
obviously.
They were there when the NFL formed in 1920, the same people, I think.
Yes, right. They're all sitting there with, like, the same fur coats on. I mean, you're looking at, you know, Texans. You know, you're, like...
Oh, Cal McNair, hardly cutting edge.
Yeah, like, this guy is, like, so backwards. Like, we could probably make a case maybe he shouldn't have a team. Like, there's just so... You know, you don't have the owners that meet... That maybe meet this cutting edge sort of coach, and because the owner is ultimately the person who's going to be picking the coach GM combination, I don't know how aggressive this cycle is going to be.
Well, I don't know that every owner really gets in that, you know, makes a decision. I think they let their GM. A lot of owners want hands off. Smart owners want hands
Smart
off.
Smart owners do.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny.
Let the football people do the football stuff.
The teams that don't win, it seems like their owners are more interventionist. So you're right. It's a cliche, but let the football people do their football thing. Yeah, but Staley missing here, by the way, on fourth and one. I think we're going to see a lot of think pieces in this offseason about what to really do on fourth
down.
How
many of them are going to be written by you?
Many, many. And they're all, yeah, like the Ringer is, you know, theringer.com. They're going to run about 375 pieces on this. I don't think we got an answer from that, but I'm curious. This playoffs, you know, there's going to be a fourth and one when the team has it on their own side of the ball. I think it's going to be Andy Reid. That's who I think makes a big fourth down decision.
Do you want to, like, make, like, a friendly wager on this for the show? Like, yeah, like who has the most controversial fourth down decision in the playoffs? Well, Andy Reid's got to be the favorite. He's, like, minus money.
What about, okay, big game yesterday, Niners-Rams. Now, Sean McVay, Mr. Cutting Edge, he never goes for it on fourth. Nope. And then Kyle Shanahan, I feel like we witnessed yesterday an out-coaching. Kyle Shanahan out-coached his mentee, Sean McVay. So, you know, I think the new school is winning out. I think the new school in the NFL is winning out. This sort of Sean McVay tree is doing really well, Cliff Kingsbury. So I think these young guys are sort of the future of the NFL. I don't see retreads. I don't see John Fox coming back and playing conservative football. I think we're going to see more aggressive on fourth down.
Yeah, and I guess the retreads would probably tell you, like, I can mix in some of the new stuff. I thought the biggest takeaway yesterday, good one there, about Shanahan out-coaching McVay again. And considering, you know, now it's, what, been six in a row that he's won against Sean McVay? So that's, like, official. And probably was official at winning the last five in a row. But six in a row, like, this isn't a rivalry. Like, it is, but it's so one-sided. Now, with obviously, Shanahan's got the secret sauce. I thought yesterday was all about the 49ers and Garoppolo, and I guess about Stafford too, in terms of indictment on him versus, you know, what we saw from the 49ers. I mean, that comeback, while it was mostly like a Deebo Samuel inspired situation, and no doubt about it, he deserves so much credit. Like, where were the Rams on this? Like, how you're allowing Deebo Samuel to catch like a 40 plus yard, you know, pass, you know, at that point in the game when they're trying to go on a game winning drive is insane to me. You have so much talent on both sides of the ball for the Rams. And when they get caught like that, it just defies logic to me.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, when a team isn't putting out full effort, they have trouble tackling. And they had trouble tackling Deebo Samuel. But everybody has trouble tackling
this
guy.
He's amazing.
That's why I'm trying to suss out, was it Jimmy Garoppolo or was it Deebo Samuel? In fact, I think Jimmy G almost cost him the game. And yet, he's the hero today. He basically threw a pick when they were rolling into the end zone. They were just ramming it down the Rams' throat, playing classic Kyle Shanahan run football. Jimmy G throws it into about four Rams. Jalen Ramsey comes up with an incredible interception. The Rams come back and score. Now, if the Rams win that game, I feel like Jimmy G's the GOAT. But now he's all of a sudden the guy today. What happened?
A couple things. One, playing for, one, they won.
Yeah, that's
one.
Big.
But secondly, him playing through the thumb injury. Like, there's a narrative part of this, right? With him playing through the thumb, they played Trey Lance last week, and a lot of people in the Bay Area were saying, just roll the dice with Lance. He played okay against the Houston Texans, better in the second half. Why wouldn't you just go with the future? Now that Jimmy G has won them this game, and now they're going to face the Dallas Cowboys in a game that many people believe the San Francisco 49ers are more likely to win than lose. Jimmy G could be the hottest chip on the trade market come this offseason. More Maggie and Perloff. Don't move.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.